But at both of those Grand Prix as well, Ferrari is right there in the thick of the battle for best of the rest with McLaren's Lando Norris and Mercedes' Valtteri Bottas and Red Bull's Sergio Perez. But the Ferrari drivers are in a real fight, sometimes beating, sometimes not beating those guys. But as you mentioned, compared to how awful last season was, this feels like redemption.
And also, I should point out that because Monaco is, whether we like it or not, Monaco is the race that everybody wants to win. It's the most famous Grand Prix in Formula One. All the Ferrari bosses, including John Alcan, the ultimate boss, they were all there because, after all, it's just down the road from the factory. So this really was the one in which to shine. And as far as Carlos is concerned, my God, was he shining.
Welcome to the Forza F1 podcast. I'm Aaron Jenkins, the editor of Forza Magazine, and with me, as always, is Andrew Frankel, Forza's Formula One editor. The Monaco Grand Prix is one of the world's three great road races, the other two being the 24 Hours of Le Mans and the Indy 500. And this year in Monaco, to everyone's surprise, Ferrari suddenly looked like the team to beat, with Ferrari topping free practice two, Charles Leclerc claiming pole position, and teammate Carlos Sainz in fourth place. But we can't talk about this year's Monaco race without recounting what happened at the end of Q3 and its potentially lingering effect. Andrew, do you want to do the honors?
First of all, let's just remember that we both work for a magazine about Ferrari. Consequently, we are Ferraristi, just like millions of people around the world. And consequently, after all the doom and gloom, which unfortunately also had to write about, for the last year or two, suddenly we had our man Leclerc, who, as I said earlier, lives literally above the shop, the starting grid, getting fastest lap and then throwing it away by crashing at the swimming pool complex. It turned out to be a lot more expensive because, regrettably, let me put it this way, the way I see it, the team were a little bit negligent for not checking every single bit of the car. Afterwards, the team boss, Binotto, said, well, sorry, we didn't check the left drive shaft. Well, it's not that big a car, and they had all night to go through it with a fine-tooth comb. They didn't. Consequently, the poor guy, who could have either won or would have had a fabulous battle with Verstappen, never got to the grid. I found it absolutely heartbreaking, but better things were to come.
You actually told me about the drive shaft thing just before we started the podcast. I hadn't seen it. All I knew when I watched the race was that of course, in Q3, he crashed the right side of the car, and everyone was concerned about the gearbox failing. But as it turns out now, after the race, team boss Binotto said that it was actually the drive shaft opposite the crash side, and it doesn't even sound like it was the end of the drive shaft attached to the gearbox. It was the side out at the wheel hub. So this could be an utter coincidence, and a remarkable coincidence it would be, but nonetheless, we had our pole sitter, the hometown hero, who had never finished a race in Formula 2 or in Formula 1, retiring before even the formation lap from his home Grand Prix.
And let's face it, there couldn't have been much wrong with the car, because his teammate drove a brilliant race in an identical car and managed to clinch second place, which was fantastic.
Yep, that of course is Carlos Sainz, who is the new partner for Leclerc this year. He didn't have quite as good a qualifying session. He qualified fourth, but after Leclerc dropped out before the race began, that elevated him to third, and we'll talk about what happened to the second place runner in a moment. But in the end, Sainz had a very quiet day. He was well behind the race leader, well ahead of, for the most part, the third place guy. But he kept it between the railings. He put in a solid race. He did exactly everything he could do. And he scored his first podium with the team, Ferrari's first podium of the season. It was just a brilliant day for him all around.
And, you know, and Ferrari, after all, it's, as you so rightly said, first time this year they've done anything really spectacular, and to get pole position with one guy and then come second with the other shows that they are obviously heading the right way.
Yes, definitely. And I think we didn't do podcasts for the last two races, but at both of those Grand Prix as well, Ferrari is right there in the thick of the battle for rest of the best of the rest with McLaren's Lando Norris and Mercedes Valtteri Bottas and Red Bull's Sergio Perez. Red Bull's Verstappen and, of course, Mercedes Lewis Hamilton are still out of reach, but the Ferrari drivers are in a real fight, sometimes beating, sometimes not beating those guys. But as you mentioned, compared to how awful last season was, this feels like redemption.
And also, I should point out that because Monaco is, whether we like it or not, Monaco is the race that everybody wants to win. It's the most famous Grand Prix in Formula One. All the Ferrari bosses, including John Alcan, are the ultimate boss. They were all there because, after all, it's just down the road from the factory. So this really was the one in which to shine. And as far as Carlos is concerned, my God, was he shining.
Yes. And you mentioned that Monaco is the race everyone wants to win. And that's some combination. That's the glamour of the setting on the French Riviera. That's the magic of the history, running through the streets of Monte Carlo, running down to the harbor, all that stuff, the mega yachts, the pageantry, all that kind of stuff. By the same token, as we were discussing, well, actually, as we discuss every year after the race, Monaco is often a terrible race, just a straight procession, because as the cars get larger and faster, it just becomes harder and harder to pass. A few years ago, Daniel Ricciardo, then of Red Bull, lost his MGUK, as I recall, relied entirely on the internal combustion engine for something like three quarters of the race, and Lewis Hamilton in a far faster car simply couldn't get by. And I think, if I remember correctly, we saw one on-track pass today at all, and that was Haas's Michael Schumacher on teammate Nikita Mazepin from 19th to 18th place in the hairpin on the first lap. Everything else was done in the pits. But for all that, it was a fascinating display of strategy that we saw, one which saw Max Verstappen, like Carlos Sainz, put in essentially a perfect race, hold off then second place Bottas at the start, and go all the way to the checkered flag to take his own first win in Monaco.
This could be the good time to mention friend Bottas, who yet again was rather unlucky. I think you'll agree that when it comes to bad luck, it never ever touches Hamilton, and it always, always happens for Valtteri Bottas, who must be wondering what on earth is going on and how a team that keeps winning championship after championship can't get a wheel off a car.
I was reminded when that happened of former Ferrari driver Chris Amon back in the 60s, who was infamous for anything that could go wrong would happen to him. And in this case, Bottas was in an easy second place, comfortable second place, pulled into the pit, and for whatever reason, the right front wheel nut had been cross-threaded, and when they put the wheel gun on it, it simply stripped the threads off it. And they tried for a minute to get it off, and then they turned the engine off and pushed the car back into the garage. We've obviously seen wheel nut issues over the years, famously Haas at Australia, 2 years in a row failing to secure the wheel nuts and releasing the car, which then loses its wheel and pulls over. I don't think I've ever seen a car go straight from the pit lane into the garage because they couldn't get a wheel off.
No, me neither. You know, we've had bits flying off. Nigel Mansell lost the wheel once at the Hungaroring, and all sorts of things have happened over the years. But this, in 2021, from the number one and most famous team, apart from our boys, hugely. How do you explain this to the board of directors in Stuttgart?
Yes, this was a debacle that we haven't seen from them in a while. But we mentioned that Verstappen had a quiet day out front, and strategy played a role for him in a way, simply in determining when to pit, where you would slot back into the lineup. But it played a much bigger role for his teammate, Sergio Perez, who qualified ninth, but due to running long and preserving his tires, as Perez is famous for doing, and some smart strategy on Red Bull's part, he ended the race in fourth. That must feel like, again, for him, a redemption of everything, all the struggles he's had this season.
You know, to get hugged by Helmut Marko, who is the hardest nosed person in the history of Formula One, is almost unheard of. But old Helmut was beside himself with joy, and rightly so.
And to be fair, Perez is clearly still struggling in qualifying, and he's trying to make up for it during the race. And today it really worked, because not only did Verstappen's victory push him ahead of Hamilton in the driver's title chase, the two finishes, first and fourth, pushed Red Bull ahead of Mercedes. And I can't remember the last time Mercedes wasn't leading the constructors' title.
All the drivers.
Yeah, this is the first time that Verstappen has ever led it in his life, simply because he's never had a car with which he could challenge Hamilton.
No, that's why, you know, on the face of it, you would think 18 finished, no major accident, what's the big deal? But there were so many little details to this. I love the way that Gasly said, that there was 1 millimeter between him and Vettel at one point, and they very nearly both ended up in the water. I should add, in all seriousness, that, of course, in Ascari in 1955 did just that, and there are, of course, divers to this day standing by should anything like this happen.
And I remember, though I can't think of the year, I want to say this might have been 1950 or 51. At the beginning of the race, a wave came up out of the harbor because there wasn't a barrier there, swept across the track and caused a pileup in the first corner. So Monaco is very much unlike any other race. And speaking of which, I hate to be a downer, but we, of course, haven't seen Ferrari contending for pole positions this year. Is Monaco a one-off, or has Ferrari picked up the pace sufficiently to be able to challenge the likes of Red Bull or Mercedes in a straight-up fight?
You just used the word straight. Well, unfortunately, the next race in Azerbaijan, I think, has the longest straight in Formula One.
1 kilometer.
1 kilometer, sorry. And I have a horrible feeling that the boys won't be up there, but psychologically, it was a huge boost from also getting some points, which again is very important, and not looking at sixth or seventh, but actually looking something a little bit nearer to the top. I honestly believe that things will get better. Don't forget, there'll be two races coming up in Austria very shortly, one after the other, because the Turkish race had to be cancelled, and Leclerc is very good in Austria. So with a little bit of luck, we get some more points there.
So Leclerc was ahead of Sainz, of course, until his retirement, allowing Sainz to finish ahead of him. But it's worth pointing out that all of the drivers that moved to new teams this year have lagged behind their teammates, in some cases dramatically. Leclerc is the clear team leader at the moment, but Sainz is putting in solid efforts for sure. Unlike the very highly regarded Daniel Ricciardo, who's been completely demolished by Lando Norris at McLaren, I think we can probably call him the legendary Fernando Alonso, hasn't been able to catch Esteban Ocon at Alpine. And until yesterday, Sebastian Vettel hadn't been able to beat Lance Stroll at Aston Martin. This is certainly not the norm. We'd have drivers come into teams before and instantly be miles ahead. And last year, of course, we had Williams George Russell jump into Lewis Hamilton's car and destroy Valtteri Bottas in Bahrain. Yeah. Do you have any guesses as to why we're seeing this pattern this year so across the board?
I'm completely puzzled. And I would have thought that Ricciardo, a previous winner of the Monaco Grand Prix, was labbed by his teammate, 22, 23-year-old. I mean, one of the bright young guys who incidentally just signed a long, long-term contract with McLaren. He must be, and he lives literally just around the corner. He must be very, very down and out, and so would anybody else, quite frankly, because they signed him up for a small fortune. We're talking millions of dollars, and so far he failed miserably.
The 7,000-plus members of the Ferrari Club of America, the world's largest Ferrari club, enjoy exciting track events, an internationally recognized concours d'élégance, and a wide variety of year-round social activities. The members of our 16 active regions and 52 chapters throughout the US and Canada also receive our monthly news bulletin, plus Prancing Horse, our full-color quarterly magazine. Our tremendous program of membership benefits even includes discounts at authorized Ferrari dealerships and selected retailers. So join today. Visit us online now at ferrariclubofamerica.org.
I am delighted about Vettel proving our conversation wrong in a way, of course, by finally getting his act together.
Yeah, so specifically for the After his just wretched year last year, being fired by Ferrari before the season begins and performing as if he deserved to be fired by Ferrari afterwards, which you can attribute to whatever, he came to Aston Martin for a fresh start and was just beaten left and right by Lance Stroll, who's a driver clearly with talent, but by the same token, it's quite possible the only reason he's there is literally because his father bought the team. But this weekend, for the first time this year, Vettel outqualified Stroll. He qualified eighth, one position behind Lewis Hamilton, who we'll get to in a minute. But during the race, he looked like his old self. He was in control. He had speed. He was running at the same speed as the front runners. And due to not making any mistakes, due to the strategy by Aston Martin, he finished fifth, which I never would have guessed before the weekend started that this was coming. I think that's fantastic, like you do. I will ask, do you think is this a one-off because Monaco is so special, so different? Or is this going to be what Vettel needs to essentially put him ahead of Stroll, which is where you and I both think he should be?
I think this will be the new norm. Spare a thought for Hamilton and Vettel, who's two world champions, 11 titles between them, starting side by side way, way back. I mean, if that's not character building, I really don't know what it is.
And yeah, so Hamilton was not only soundly behind his teammate all weekend, which happens from time to time, he was never comfortable. And it's very rare that unlike Bottas, who sort of starts where he finishes in terms throughout practice and qualifying, he doesn't get significantly better. Hamilton always starts slow and builds up over the course of the weekend, almost invariably passing Bottas by the time we get to qualifying. He was just nowhere this weekend. And I can't remember the last time we saw him completely uncomfortable in the car.
And he never stopped grumbling.
Nope. And this comes one weekend after he got his 100th pole position, a feat which no other driver, and I think it's only three teams or maybe five teams, have done. So, yeah, he grumbled
nonstop. Thursday, there will be a serious discussion after this practice. And this is totally unacceptable. Hello, you're the most successful driver of all times. So you come unstuck once, take it on the chin, mister. Don't go on like an old ninny.
Well, we certainly saw that he did not take it on the chin when he tried and failed to undercut Pierre Gasly, which then put him in a position to allow both Vettel and Perez past him as well. And Hamilton, we've talked about it, is well known for whining in the car that his tires are going off, that things are getting away from him, and then he magically pulls it out and wins the race.
He wins, yes.
This time, his anger got the better of him in a way that he took it out on the team.
The team, which gave him all these championships and the best car in the world, and they get it wrong once. And anybody would think, the way he slagged them off, that it was like the back of a great Haas stroke Williams situation. He was very unkind to the team, totally unprofessional, and I'm very surprised. Dare I say disappointed.
I'm surprised as well, but now that I've said it out loud, we know that part of the reason that Hamilton is as successful as he is because he's as driven as he is, and that's one of his strengths, according to the team, that he constantly pushes them. So maybe we're being unfair. Like, do you suppose Ayrton Senna would have been calm and polite on the radio if this had happened to him during the race?
No, Ayrton, when he crashed in 1988 at the Poitiers, he went straight home because, like all these guys, he just lives around the corner and he wouldn't talk to anybody for hours. But he didn't go, he didn't vent on the team. He blamed himself, rightly so. He lost concentration because he was leading by half an hour. Lewis could have said, guys, you've been fantastic to me. Just for once, you got it wrong. Never mind, tomorrow or, you know, in 2 weeks' time, there's another race. Let's have a drink. That's what he could have done.
I think that one thing we're certainly seeing this year that we haven't seen so much in the past is Mercedes playing more mind games. They've always downplayed their, for in 2015, 2016, they were downplaying their chances and everybody just rolled their eyes and said, of course you're going to win. And they're still doing that, but they've stepped it up with the bendy wing claim and a few other things. And I don't know if it's just theater or if they are actually for the first time in 7 years worried about actually having competition.
Yes, I think for the first time, as you so rightly said, they are actually under real pressure. And let's just see how they shape up. They can either fight, you know, and win again, or Verstappen will, dare I say, win the championship. Would I be upset? I would love to see Max win the championship. And I would love, and like the things I love, for instance, of this weekend, of today or whatever, McLaren have become a happy team. They've got lots more money. And look at this glorious color scheme they came up with. That to me is Formula One. You know, happy, smiling, winning.
And you mentioned that from the podium. We had no Mercedes at all. We had the new generation of drivers. They're all up there. Sainz has never been on the podium for his team. This is Norris's, I think, second podium of this season. It's Verstappen's first win. If that's Bottas and Hamilton up there, it's like, yeah, we expected this. So that's half of what made the weekend exciting.
And also, may I just say how much I personally loved the band, how they played. It was all the world. It was happy. There was a Prince wearing gloves, of course. And I should salute Monaco for having 6,000 spectators, very carefully separated. No talk, as far as I know, of COVID whatsoever. And they did a superb job under very, very difficult circumstances.
Next up, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, we have another street circuit, this time in Azerbaijan, specifically in the city of Baku. Aside from one turn where the circuit wraps around a castle, it's a very different looking street circuit, including that 1 kilometer long front straight where I think the cars 1 year reached 235 miles an hour. So I think, unfortunately, we both agree that it's going to be a Mercedes 1-2 or a 1-3, in part because I think they might still have the fastest car. They might still have the fastest engine. And after the just horrible top-to-bottom experience this weekend, I can't imagine them fumbling the ball again 2 weekends in a row.
I have to agree with you entirely. I have a funny feeling that Bottas will win that race. He loves that circuit. He's very, very quick. He's completely fearless. I wouldn't mind. He would make a nice change again. He hasn't done it, you know, for a while now. And as far as the Ferrari guys are concerned, please, please, can we have more of the same?
That's it for this episode of the Forza F1 podcast. The next race is in Azerbaijan in 2 weeks' time.
Thanks for listening this week. If you like the podcast, check out our website, forzamag.com. That's forza-mag.com, where you can subscribe to our newsletter for the latest Ferrari news and reviews. You can follow us on social media at forzamag, forzamag, no hyphen.